I've had a lot of coffee, and this one stands out. It's called Larry's Coffee. It has this really cute vibe to it, first of all. I've been drinking it in the mornings, and it's noticeably smoother. My favorite blend is Bean Martin. It just tasted so good. I immediately went and got a second cup of coffee. I just love the rich, dark flavor. It's got a little cartoon character on the bag, and he is drinking coffee, and he also has a martini because it's probably an espresso martini because, you know, he's Bean Martin. They have light, medium, dark roast, espresso, decaf. Larry's Coffee is independent, family-owned and operated, roasted in Raleigh, North Carolina for over 30 years. You can try this wonderful coffee and support the BGS Podcast Network at larryscoffee.com/BGS. Listeners of the BGS Podcast Network get a free gift with purchase when they purchase through that show link. And again, that's larryscoffee.com/BGS. Thanks for listening to the BGS Podcast Network. If you're interested in diving deeper into the world of roots music, Americana, and beyond, be sure to explore more from The Bluegrass Situation. Visit thebluegrasssituation.com to browse the latest editorials. And don't forget to subscribe to our weekly newsletter for new releases, exclusive content, video sessions, and more delivered straight to your inbox. Sign up at thebluegrasssituation.com/newsletter. And welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation. I'm your host, Cindy Howes. Thank you for joining us today. I am so excited. It's Maya Fest with one of our favorite besties, Maya DeVitri. Before we get into that, let's talk about ways that we can keep in touch here. You can sign up for our newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter that tells you who's been on Basic Folk recently and who's coming up. You can sign up for that at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com. We're also on social media at Basic Folk Pod on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. We're also a listener-supported podcast. If you'd like to throw us a couple dollars and help with production costs, that would be really swell. You can make a contribution by going to basicfolk.com/donate, or you can find the link in the show notes. Okay. This is such a cool show today. Maya DeVitri has been on Basic Folk half a dozen times, only second to our favorite man bestie, Mark Arelli, because we are so obsessed with her songwriting perspective from her time in the Straybirds to her solo work. Every time she's been on the show, we try and do something special. So she's been on with her siblings, Nina and Lyle DeVitri, her partner, the bassist, producer, musician, Ethan Yojevitz, and her musical besties, Shelby Means and Joel Timmons. When we heard about her fifth studio album, All My Faith, we knew that we had to raise the bar on the best working songwriter today in this podcast's opinion and do something very, very special. Maya was down with this idea, and she invited Anna Egge, Caitlin Canty, John Craigie, Kristen Andreasen, and Oliver Wood on this episode so we could hear from some of her favorite writers on these new songs. So we knew that this was going to be a great experience, but it turned out even better than we had hoped. The insight these writers share intensify Maya's new songs and give an even greater understanding of why they make such an impact and pack such a punch. We'll be listening to clips from the new album throughout the episode, but I am so excited. This is actually like the most excited that I've been to release an episode with Maya DeVitri, Anna Egge, Caitlin Canty, John Craigie, Kristen Andreasen, and Oliver Wood on Maya Fest 2026 on Basic Folk. All right, welcome to Maya Fest 2026. I am so pleased to have this great panel of singer-songwriters and musicians here. Maya DeVitri is here. Hey, Maya.
Hi.
Hi, Maya.
And I was hoping that everybody else could introduce themselves, and let's go alphabetical order by first name.
Hello, I'm Anna Egge. Happy to be here today.
I think I'm next. I'm Caitlin Canty.
I'm John Greggy, coming at you from Portland, Oregon.
K comes after J. I'm Kristen Andreasen here from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hey, I think it's me. I'm Oliver Wood here in the pollen-infested Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, that was great. That was like a first test to see how our brains are working, and I thought that went pretty well. So
we can do better.
That was a strong test for the introduction.
So this album, All My Faith, I first heard Maya play these songs at Folk Alliance earlier this year in New Orleans, and I thought that the songs were so good, like next level, and it really made me want to know why these songs were so incredible. Like, I'm not a musician or a writer of any kind, and I thought it would be a cool exercise to get other songwriter friends of Maya's together to dig deep and explain like what's happening with Maya's writing and what's happening with this record and what's happening with these songs. Like, what is it about the lyrics, the phrasing, the melody that like is really outstanding? So everybody on the call had a chance to listen to the record a few times before this recording. Maya shared the lyrics, the album credits, and a track by track write up for all of the songs. And Maya chose 3 songs for each person to specifically dig into. But of course, everybody is free to share comments on whatever songs you'd like. Lucky for us, one of the songs that Maya chose for John, she also asked Caitlin to focus on this song, is called All My Faith.
Somebody made the bed, tucked in every side. Sheets are baby blue, stretched across the sky. I saw a heart-shaped lake, I saw a heart-shaped cloud. I will not let the beauty go slipping by me now. Breast against your chest, wings against the sky.
Do you want to start talking about if you have any notes that you brought to share? That would be awesome.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I've known Maya for a while, and we've done a couple of tours together. And one of the, I think, reasons I've always enjoyed playing with Maya and felt comfortable with sharing crowds with her is that I really admire her lyrics, and she's such a good lyricist. And this whole album is full of that. This is like a cool song. It's funny because I didn't know it was the title track. I just kind of dove in without looking at what the album was called. And this one felt so strong off the bat. And then when I kind of zoomed out and saw it, I was like, oh, that makes sense. It's always hard sometimes to pick a song if you're going to do an album named after a song or vice versa. But yeah, I think the groove on this one really stood out for me. I really liked that. The harmonies, I'm not sure who's doing the harmonies on this, if that's Maya or one of the players. And then I thought the piano was very epic, like very 70s.
Piano is so good.
Yeah.
This song is like a shot in the arm, I thought.
Yeah, I really wanted liner notes like the whole time. I was like, who are these people? Who I wanted to know more of the story. But it's kind of cool sometimes when you don't know and you're just really going in blind. It's really fun.
I will say that throughout the record, Joel Timmons and Shelby Means are singing harmonies and sounding so good.
Cool. Yeah. So good.
Oh, I was just saying, I loved that this was the kickoff song, the title track, and the first in the whole sequence. It's really the mission statement in a way for the record, but I felt like it was Maya's mission statement on how to live and how to spend her time. You know, it felt so personal at the same time it's like a full party. The whole band's there. It's not, you know, that first song where I think on one of her earlier records, Wilderness kicks it off. And that's like a different kind of swirling, mysterious mission statement. This one's like, the party's here. It's on and it's live, you know, and we're going to jump right in to like what this is all about. We're not going to beat around the bush. And I love that choice to name it after the song, put it first in line. And the there was a line I wanted to write down. Oh, like I want the kind of love we can never untangle. I felt like that and her headwaters of laughter and headwaters of crying, like, I will not let the beauty go slipping by me now. All those little nuggets in this first song kind of tee up for me a lot of the other themes throughout. And so well done on sequencing, well done on writing it. And I love it. I want this as my mission statement too.
Cool. That's great. Pina colada's on a decked out flatbed hauled by a lime green tractor. Scooters in a line on the crosswalk, cutting off a pedal tavern. If there's good times waiting in a fireball shop, these gals are here to have them. She was staring down an open box of pizza like a statue, cross-legged on the floor at the airport gate in a hot pink cowgirl hat. She looked up like tequila, had her trapped inside a cactus. But a friend reached out her hand, what she said felt just like magic. Do you need me to hold something for you so you can stand up? Do you need me to hold something for you so you can stand up? Do you need me to hold something for you so you can stand up? And I thought, is Jesus back as a bachelorette hungover in Tennessee? And it struck me as so gentle, pulled the rug on all my judging. I thought, if we talk to each other like all around this country, if we could hold a little something for somebody who is struggling, carry on stuff with cowboy boots, I guess we've all got something. Do you need me to hold something for you so you can stand up? Do you need me to hold something for you so you can stand up? Do you need me to hold the next song that we'll talk about is Bachelorette Lessons, which had John Craigie and Oliver Wood under. So, Oliver, do you want to start talking about this track?
Sure. Yeah. I was going to, the very first thing I thought of, and I'm pretty sure I'm the oldest one here, so I might be dating myself, but has anybody seen a movie called Being There?
Yes.
Peter Sellers. And yeah, but it's basically about a misunderstanding that takes something very shallow and interprets it as very deep. So it's not the same thing. I realize that's not exactly what's happening here necessarily at all. But I think you talk about how you took your judgment and turned it around. And I think that's what was beautiful about it, is you turned your judgment from, you know, a hungover bachelorette to our modern day un-Christ-like society. And it was more of a comment on that, like, we need more of that kind of talk, you know, regardless of where it's actually coming from. I just like how you flip-flopped it. And so it's both funny. I like any song that can be funny and deep. Perfect. Yeah, so well done.
I thought this was like Maya's John Prine song.
Very John
Prine.
She's
always good at least
yeah,
one.
Very yeah, very John Prine. And living in Nashville, I've been here 12 years now, so I'm totally hip to the, in fact, I wonder how it translates to people who don't know Nashville. I'm not sure, but I think somehow it's universal. You can tell that it's a very casual encounter that you've turned into this beautiful thing. You know?
Yeah. I don't know Nashville very well, but we do have casual encounters in other places too, in Portland. And I felt, it's funny, it's how this song, this could feel like this was down at my local bar, Laurel Thirst or whatever. It felt very, I guess Portland has that music town energy, but it's a great chorus on this song. My friend Bart Budwig and I, we always talk about how certain words are so good in songs, and Jesus is such a good word, you know, song-wise. I always think of, you know, I was reading somewhere that the translation is like Josh is sort of how it could have gone down. Jesus kind of means, and I was like, man, it's so lucky for popular music that it's not Josh. Because
it could have been Josh Christ.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Joshua Christ.
And yeah, if you think about so many, I mean, there's all obviously religious songs, but then there's so many, anytime I use Jesus in a song, it has something about the cadence and the punch of it. Jesus, you know, it's really good for a song.
Yeah, it sings well. It was made for singing.
Yeah. And Maya sings it. It punches really nice in this song. And again, great lyrics. I'm a big fan of Maya's writing. And this felt so classic, you know.
Sweet. Shout out to Bart.
Yeah. Bart's going to
love. Glad he's doing better.
Oh, yeah. Bart's going to love this song. He's going to be stoked. And yeah. And this was a really cool, a little more stripped down. I like where it sits in the record. It's really nice.
Ethan Yojevitz sequenced this record.
Cool.
Shout out to Ethan.
Yeah, great.
Good job.
Great name on that, too. Yojevitz. That's good. That'll be in a song someday.
I love this song. And I like the title because it's sort of like what you're saying, Oliver. Like what's the lesson learned here?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Let's learn from some bachelorettes.
And yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I love the title, too. Instant classic. That's what I think.
Yeah. I love totally. That. Everybody's our teacher, no matter what your judgment, you're learning some.
Can I jump in on this one too? If we're all just talking about bachelorette lessons. So the first time that I clicked play on the link, I was at the dentist. And so I had my headphones on, my little sunglasses. And this track, as soon as the chorus started, I just started weeping. I literally had tears going down my face, like to the point that I had to apologize to my dental hygienist. And I was not expecting that Bachelorette Lessons was the one that was going to get me, but I was weeping and I went home. I was like, why did I cry at that song? Every time it came on, I just kept crying and I was singing it. It's so singable. It's instant classic. I'm like going to learn this song today. And I was I'm a mother of a 3-year-old and I was singing this song with Ever because it just felt fun. And I was sitting on the couch holding her and somehow we started playing this game. It was like, is the lyric in the song is, do you need me to hold something for you so you can stand up? That's the lyric in the song. But somehow Ever and I were playing this game. Do you need me to hold this baby for you so you can stand up? And I realized the reason I was crying is because I think that there's something about motherhood in this song that like that the figure of the bachelorette who's reaching out to her friend, like this is like what being a parent is. It's this self-sacrificial instant response to help somebody. And then as a mother, so many times I've felt like the girl sitting cross-legged, I have to flag this lyric. She looked up like tequila had her trapped inside a cactus. I have never heard a more amazing description of feeling hungover. But that's like motherhood is like the number of times I've been holding a baby and a bottle. And like yesterday she spat her gum into my hand. I'm like, where do I put this gum? Like I need someone to hold something for me just so I can stand up and live and just be a human. It just resonated so hard with me. And like Oliver said, was both funny and profound. I just, I can't get over this song. So.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I drove straight to Reno. Through the cottonwood on the wind like falling stars and past the burned out trees up on all the ridges. Sometimes the mountains are the mirror that breaks your heart. And if I quit this, if I disappear, don't worry about me for a minute. I've never been happier. Just means I'm tired of the rhythm. just means I followed all the signs. I took every edge that I never could.
Okay, let's go to Cold Lake Good Snacks, John Craigie and Caitlin Canty. Do you guys want to talk about this song? Maybe Caitlin, you can start.
So Maya had mentioned that, you know, a lot of the songs in this record are dealing with like being honest about your relationships and this relationship with touring and being honest about the fact that it's not all fun and games. You know, when people get so excited, they see your tour map, like, oh, you're going to these wonderful places. You're like, 4 or 5 seconds and we're gonna just blow on to the next town. It's from the outside, it looks like such a dream life, and it is, but there's the true difficulties and the real wear and tear and the missing out. I think that's one of the harder things, that you have to blow by all those exits you'd like to take. And so this song, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's just for those of us who travel that same road. It feels like another one of these, how you manage your time. I feel like this record to me, at least in the songs I had to really zoom in on, are all about considering what you do with your precious time. And this one is what you do with your precious time as an artist. You know, what choices you make. You take your art out to share it, or do you go to that cold lake with those good snacks and just stay there for eternity? I just got to say this, we wanted to talk about the craft of songwriting and like unpack some of these moves. But I wish I could unpack this move. This song has a bridge toward the end, the last sung bit. It's just like so profoundly exciting. It gives you chills if you listen to it for 20 times. I mean, it keeps going and rising further into this dream state. It's almost like the rest of the song is on like the road level. The wheels are turning. The tired of the rhythm of the road. That line, you know, it's just like the full song, and then she breaks free of that mode into this bridge that sends you soaring up into that dream. And it's just like, you want me to tell you how she did it? I don't know. It's just one of those gorgeous moments that I wanted to say, this is such a great opportunity, Cindy, to put this crew together and talk about Maya's music, because every time a Maya record comes out, I feel like I'm talking to my friends about it like this. So now I have a platform to like really rave. But one of the reasons is, besides being a great songwriter, she writes these songs that are like, when I got into songwriting, it was because I heard music and songs that moved me, and I couldn't figure out how something could move me in such a way. And I wanted to figure out how I could maybe do that. You know, and it was artists I didn't know. And, you know, the Tom Petty's and the Gillian Welch and the Bob Dylan's, and those were the heroes. And the really cool thing about Maya is I know her. I've known her since the early days of NERFA and that weird hotel room in Kerhonkson where we had to air out our fresh little baby songs. And so she's like a mortal hero, and she's crafted these gorgeous tunes. And so for me, every time I hear them, they hit me in a way like any stranger could have written this, but I'm also like, she crafted this thing and felt this thing. So it's just, I didn't get a chance to explain how I knew Maya, and I wanted to explain why this is just so wonderful.
That's beautiful. John, top that.
Wow. Yeah. You guys are so good at this. Going into this, I was thinking, cause I give the worst interviews, like when I have to do press for my album. I don't know why I ended up treating the interviewers like the cops, you know? I'm like, I ain't saying shit, you know?
We're the good guys here.
No, I know. It's like, it's not even, the interviewers are so nice. I just like, it's one of my things where I'm so bad at, yeah, everything Caitlin said was so good. I just, yeah, this is a great song. The production is amazing. The pedal steel and the organ together, beautiful. I don't know who produced, again, I kept wanting to look at the liner notes.
Maya
produced it.
Okay, yeah, no surprise there. But the yeah, everything is so well layered in this song. And yeah, and you made a good point too about how from the outside, all of us know this, you know, people who don't tour can really romanticize it and project a lot on it. And there's so many aspects of it that only we know about, and there's so much not only struggle, but also just like mundaneness. But then there's these little things that sometimes mean more than the show itself or more than the audience, that no one will ever really understand except you in that moment. And that's what this song felt like to me.
Beautiful.
I think what maybe Caitlin was talking, no, or and Kristen on the about your kid just being a parent, like the sacrifice of being a touring musician, where you know it does look glamorous from the outside, and sometimes it even feels glamorous in moments, but then there's so much time of the things that you miss, and for me, I just think of it in terms of my kids growing up or what I missed it with my family being at home. And it's like, that's the price, or that's kind of like the sacrifice. And I kind of have what's turned into a shtick for my interviews, John, like, and it's not even a shtick. It's just something that I remind myself that all this, that sacrifice becomes worth it when you value what you're doing even more. And, you know, I think when we start in this business, we're always like, it's exciting, it's fresh, people are paying attention to us, there's an ego aspect to it, and you're finally doing what you love, and you actually, somebody paid you for a gig, and there's all those initial things, but then you get to travel and all this stuff, but a lot of that stuff wears off. And for me, it's totally worn down to, I never want to leave home. I love being home so much. I'm not one of those lifer guys on tour forever. I'm not going to be that guy, I don't think. But I will say what's made it all sort of worth it and works the price worth it is when, you know, occasionally people, like you said, John, occasional moments. And for me, it's sometimes when people come up after a show or you get an email or something and someone says, hey, you got me through a really tough time, and or this music makes me really happy, and my kid turned me on to it, or vice versa. A grown up turns a kid on to it. But it's the thing about that you're doing something important. It's not just self-indulgent anymore. It's like, oh, these people need this. They need to escape from the real world, or they need to be connected with each other, and I can help. You know what I mean? And that part sounds corny, and it is a little bit of a shtick at this point, but I never stop thinking about that now. When I'm dreading leaving home, I'm just like, all right, it's time to go out and do important work, you know?
So. It's like Malcolm Holcomb. It's like Malcolm Holcomb used to say, "We're in the service industry."
Yeah.
But he meant it, serving souls. You know, we're in the service industry.
Yeah, I like that.
It's the one of the reasons why the music biopic, I think, always seems to not really, not that it financially fails, but for me, it's always kind of like doesn't hit, because I was watching some sports movie recently, some sports drama, and sports have the obvious like. Big moment, right? You can have the final at the buzzer score, but a musician's life is made up of so many of these little obscure sensational moments, you know, that you can't really compress into, you know, a 2-hour movie. And I think that's the thing, is like what you just said, there's the things that really are significant to us are these very small, and what some might view as insignificant, just a conversation you're having with someone who came to the show, anything like that. And I think that's, it's just really hard to distill into some sort of like scene of success. Whereas we know better that it's just like sprinkled out like little grains of salt. Yeah, it's really, yeah.
If you find when we are walking a penny on the ground, you know well, a penny can be saved. But if you find when we are talking a coin in your soul, it will be gone if it is not given away. Gold and silver, you can't keep it high on any shelf. Takes on the eyes to see it on the ground. But there are reaches here between us. inside the soul. They must be shared if they are to be found.
Okay, so let's go back to track number two. Let's go to track number two, Coin in Your Soul, which Maya wanted to hear from Kristen about, which I think is like, this is the perfect Kristen song.
I want to know more about that. I love this song. I also could see talking about it in a pair. Could I do that with one of the other songs that Maya asked me to talk about?
We'll allow it.
Okay. Because, so Coin in My Soul, in Coin in Your Soul, the second track has this, you know, kind of deceptively simple structure about finding a penny on the ground and it being a metaphor. And I think that this song is about what you give away and how, you know, you can become richer by giving something away than by holding onto it. It does remind me of a lyric in one of my old songs. I had to write my own lyric down. I've got a little bit of love left untasted. Only a love saved is wasted. I feel like that was a lyric from one of my songs. And I feel like we, as songwriters, often are trying to communicate this idea of the personal gift of being generous. And I think Maya's done a really amazing job in this. She's also referencing a Spanish poet who I don't know, but I need to go find his work. Antonio Machado inspired this song in some way. So the flip side of this, I think it really pairs well with this other song called Adaptation, where I think there's this balance we're trying to find in life. Just like Caitlin and others have been saying, I feel like this record is very much about how we choose to spend our time and the lessons that lead us to those choices. And, you know, adaptation is kind of like where generosity starts to become self-sacrifice and actually, you know, this idea of giving something away is only builds you up until it doesn't, until it starts to drain you and until it starts to make you lesser than, right? So she has this line in Adaptation, I guess we love whatever blade we use our time to sharpen, double down our sacrifice and let our new shell harden. It's really incredible. This song is like about the ways that we build a skill that ends up not serving us. You know, like the old saying of be careful what you get good at. I feel like this song was like really speaking to me. So I don't know if that's one of the reasons that Maya gave it to me, but I think, you know, all of us, especially in the service industry, tend, you know, we become really good at finding the way that we can give to others and sometimes don't take care of ourselves. So anyway, I just see these two songs as being related, maybe because they were both assigned to me, but I see them as two sides of a coin. And they also are both about, you know, I think they're speaking to this really present moment of we have increasing income disparity throughout the world and this almost gamified acquisition habit of the very rich. And I think she does this beautiful job of speaking to like why that doesn't serve anyone, least of all, perhaps the very rich. You know, she says any animal can be a prisoner of adaptation, right? So there's this planet with a castle full of haunted billionaires. They did not build the kingdom, but they like to call it theirs. It's a parasitic picture, but they've really honed the caption, gets cooked up like a recipe and sold like it just happens. I think that, so like these billionaires are adapting to the notion of like, I've become good at making money. I need to just keep making money. I don't know. That's what I see in these two songs. And it just felt very current and also very, you know, full of the small detail that allows a listener to connect and find themselves in a song. Mm.
Let's keep rolling on adaptation. Anna, do you want to chime in?
Sure. Yeah, I love this song. So interesting. I loved immediately how Maya, you flip the, you know, usual positive connotation with that word adaptation. You know, that's usually my takeaway when I hear or think of that word, is that, you know, it's like, oh, I'm able to roll with it. And, you know, here I am still strong, still showing up. But this other side of it, then, to use the word prisoner with it, a prisoner of adaptation, it's so great. It's so interesting to kind of flip that script and expose this, you know, other side of just, you know, keeping up to just, and doing everything to just have things stay the same. Like, do the status quo, just keep things as they are. Don't step out of your lane, you know, all that stuff. I love the melody too. Yeah, I feel like there's this whole record and these songs, there's like there's just a lot of vulnerability and kind of making space for recalibrating where you are as a human. And this song really speaks to that so directly. I mean, also the one about touring too, you know, and just saying, you know, this is, I'm in this moment, and this moment is where I have the choice. And that's always the place of power. Yeah. Keep your heart from breaking, to keep your life from, what is it? From making, no, to keep the life you're making. Yeah. Instead of that, you know, you're like, how about not? how about not staying the same? How about seeing what else is possible? You know, I love it.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing? You said vulnerability and power, and I'd written that down. That's one of the things about Maya, her lyrics and her singing choices or abilities I've always marveled at. She, even just the subject matter of like saying that through that Cold Like Good Snacks song, hinting that touring might not be so as wonderful as the only life path we can choose. Like, our currency is mystery. Like, she's letting herself, you know, say, well, she's showing that life without any makeup on and without the lights on stage, you know, and that vulnerability is in the lyrics, in her perspective. But the part that's really easy to see is it's in her voice. I think there's so many like whispers to roars, or the dynamic range is so profound. And I feel like that is on those of us who come from like solo folk singer songwriter situation, that at the start, that's not necessarily the way that path leads. It's usually like very lyric focused, very a smaller existence. And I often wonder if like Maya's way somehow like this, her early Stray Birds education of, you know, three-part harmonies, this string band trio touring like mad, writing in healthy competition with bandmates, like that kind of education, if that like stretched those boundaries of her quietest and loudest or her highest and lowest notes. But I feel like those, I've always noticed that she allows herself to be vulnerable, and that is the most powerful thing. And the more vulnerable she is, the more powerful she is. And it just keeps, you know, growing. And I'm taking notes.
Yeah. Can I sort of second what Caitlin just said? Because it seems like a moment to say something else that I really felt in listening to this record, knowing that it was recorded live over 3 days. Just the bravery of expressing that kind of vocal range in what you know is a live recording session with a whole band, you know, waiting on you, dependent on you, like, you know, the clock ticking, and to go from that whisper to that roar and to really allow such free expression in a live recording session. I just kept thinking, like, this is the kind of record that could never be a debut record. It's like it's the only the kind of record that somebody can make who's made some records and had that other kind of experience of like really thinking, going into the studio and making a layered record where you use all of the tricks of the studio to make choices about each track. And I just felt like all of these arrangements felt like observing water in rocks. It's just like they're just, you're letting the music just go where it needs to go. And you just like can't do that until you've had the other experience.
Right. Totally.
Beautiful.
If it was fast, or if it were slow, we both just got older without noticing, and now there's silver in your
one song. Let's talk about the song Occasional Oranges, which I also found to be a little John Prine-ish in certain ways. But Anna, what did you think about Occasional Oranges?
Oh, it's so whimsical.
It's like John Prine and Kate Bush came together.
Well, to write a song, first of all, like the lyrics, to write a song that's this, and again, also the vulnerability of being so sensual. Like, I remember in my writing when I first started, you know, really going there, and that's a real vulnerability, and it's beautiful. And that's expressed also in that, the melody that keeps rising and rising and going up and going up and going up, you know, it keeps that sort of sense of mystery and time just kind of being suspended or something, like the magic trick. But yeah, the idea of the metaphor that our bodies, you know, don't make vitamin C and we need it, that what if our selves no longer knew how to make love or feel love? It's fascinating. I've never would have thought of that. And I happen to be in a very like super, super orange phase. I have one almost every single day for dessert after dinner. So I was like, oh my God, Occasional Oranges. It's my song. Not so occasional, actually. It's my usual orange. Usual oranges.
Yeah. That's great.
Occasional promise that if I die first, you wrap me up in a soft fleece blanket. There's nobody else, babe. There's nobody else. I don't know what happened back then.
It's hard to pick a favorite on this album, but I think this is my favorite, Nobody Else. And Caitlin and Maya kind of reminds me of your co-write song, The Odds of Getting Even, just a little bit of like turning it on your head and stuff. So yeah. What did you guys think of this? Caitlin, you want to start?
Sure. I don't know who else is assigned this one, but I just adore this song. Some people talk about phrasing when someone's singing their lyrics, like phrasing so you hear the lyrics, so you hear the words, you know, like that. Oh, good phrasing, I think it gets thrown around a lot. Like this song just is the groove is so deep, and her words are what are is cementing that groove. It's what's locking it down and playing with it at the same time. I feel like this song, it's just like the joy in a sing-along is so tangible. The first time you hear it, you want to know all the words so you can sing along with the chorus, you know? And it's not what I expected would be happening when you hear the first verse that comes on. It feels like a little more of a classic country soul kind of, this is a love song. There's nobody else I want to grow old with, or like, period, very clear cut, except the chorus from there goes on in a absolutely conversational, almost like written down verbatim way, right? And then the chorus is also this arm out the window, driving in the summertime, singing along at top voice, banger. And it's like, how did this just happen? I was not expecting that. So I think the way that this song plays on your expectations of what, you know, there's nobody else, very simple idea, and just throws it out to like, I don't know what just happened with our argument in the kitchen. It becomes this going from some kind of like, could have been written anywhere country song trope into real love, like real good, bad, ugly, domestic, whoops, I just turned my claws on you because there was nobody else. So there's like the nobody else reading of you're the love I want to spend the rest of my days with, and then there's the nobody else reading of like that loneliness of like, I'm sorry you see me at my worst because there's nobody else here, you're the only one. And I don't know, that's a obviously great craft, but it's like, you don't see the seams on Maya's songs or the way she stitched it together. You like just feel it. And then I just keep going back to these songs wondering like, how did this work again? You know, how did she do this? And this song for me is such a treat to listen to. Like, is the price of feeling so at home that I take you for granted? I mean, that just sums it up. That lyric sums it up. But I think there's such a wonderful thing when you hear a song for the first time, you never get that again, right? There's that first listen, but this song doesn't wear out on repeated listens. It just kind of feels like it's absolutely one of those gems that would, if I had heard this when I was just starting out songwriting, I would have said like, this is what I want to do with my life, you know? So that's what launched me on that comment earlier. It's just, it's so, so good. It's just so good and a joyful sing-along. Can I just say one thing? I mentioned her Stray Birds upbringing, and I feel like this sort of like thinking of the backup singers on this sort of song, like you want to hear those harmonies, but I think you also think of the backup singers as like who's singing along in their truck as they drive down the road listening to this number. And Maya has a unique ability to really like she highlights some of her lyrics that you just can't help but sing along with or feel. I know I'm like fangirling out, but I went to a Bob Dylan show and I was told to lower my expectations because you usually can't understand his what he's saying. You know, you're not going to understand a word. He just mumble sings at you. And I'm like, okay. And I thought it was profound. I heard this beautiful show he put on, and he just sent these, the words that I felt like he really wanted you to hear were delivered in this clear burst of light that just hit you straight in the heart. And I think that that I just felt like this song is a lot of those, it's like the whole thing just hits you straight in the heart, but Maya has that ability to send them at you. And I wish I could figure it out. Cindy, I feel like you tasked us with like explaining how this is done. And I'm like, tell me how it is done.
What's the code?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Crack it.
Right. Yeah, Oliver was the other assignee to this.
Yeah. Well, I a happily married dude and actually having an anniversary tomorrow. This reminded me, it's a good, it strikes a lot of words. Like Caitlin just mentioned that line that kind of says it all, just the, you get so comfortable, which maybe that relates back to the adaptation song too. You know, you take things for granted. But I don't know, something else that really struck me was the line about nobody else licks the wounds that the world sold me, I think it was, right? And I think of that a lot, learning many times the hard way, like the, you know, those wounds that you lick figuratively are also ones that you aggravate, you know what I mean? Like those old are things that you have to learn not to trigger, or have to understand when they've been triggered to understand someone's reaction. It's part of being intimate with somebody and close to somebody, is knowing like, oh, that's not about me. That's, you know, that's not about me. That's not their stuff. That's my stuff. Or that's not my stuff. That's their stuff. But something I always struggled with as a sort of introvert dude who came up in a not very expressive family was that vulnerability was, you know, a weakness. That's a typical feeling for men to have, I think. And to learn how it's a strength, we're talking about my strength and vulnerability. And I think that's one of the things in a relationship that you realize is that how much of a strength vulnerability is, and to be able to say, hey, that wasn't your fault, that was me, you know, and or to be aware of what you're feeling about something and being able to express it. I mean, I'm still working on that every day. It's really hard work, and it's always worth it if you do it. But vulnerability equaling strength. I like that theme that's come up a couple times. That's a big one.
The next song, Confidence of the Sun. It's in my head right now. Anna Eggy, would you take it away?
Yeah. Thanks, Oliver. You teed me up perfectly, because it is very, this is the epitome of that. I feel like if there's like a kernel to this record, it might be this song for me, including you saying, Cindy, that you hear it in your head. I think that's partly maybe because there's so much unison singing and repetition of the title in the song. All the confidence of the sun. And it's interesting. The first time I listened to it, I thought, is this about someone, Maya, for example, the I, and is it potentially about someone else they are looking up to? I thought of that because of literally the sun, looking up to the sun, being above you, and aspiring, you know, towards having the confidence that another expresses. But then on second listening, I was like, oh no, this is Maya, or the I self, accepting and standing in that place of confidence, and knowing that their light is shining, and that, you know, they're, I think, is that right? That's what I think the song is. Okay. And it's beautiful. And yeah, the simplicity of that statement being sort of like a incantation or a mantra, almost like said over and over and in unison with the other singers, it feels like that. It feels like a heartbeat, an acknowledgement over and over that I am the light, this little light of mine, I guess, sort of thing. And then, yeah, and then it, how it does spread out towards the end for the harmony and the sort of like the light shining out more, you know, not just acknowledging that it's, that your light is shining, but that what the sun does is feed all of us. And so acknowledging that your love and your light is shining, and that you own that with the confidence of, like, I don't know what the word is, but knowing that it just beams out and it's for everybody.
Okay, this is another perfect Kristen song. And I thought, I feel like this song is like the most vulnerable song on the album. I just wanted to say a couple of things. Like, there are, so this song is about Maya's grandmother who passed away. And there's a couple of things that happen between Maya and her grandmother in this song that I find to be like some of the most vulnerable actions I've heard in a song. It's in a way that it's almost like, and no offense to be taken to this, Maya, but I was like a little like, ooh, do you really want to share this? Like, be so vulnerable. But it's just, I've like listening to this record and like thinking about strength and vulnerability, it's like sitting differently with me now. This is also a top fave of mine, Traveler.
I'd stop in just to open her windows, later on just to close them again. I'd cradle her feet in my hands, she'd apologize for her ancient skin. But she still let me play with her hair. We made it a crown, silver and thin. She insisted on carrying all that she could. The milk was too heavy, but spoons were good. She was a traveler at heart. Oh, it must have been something to set off somewhere unknown. Travel so light and unencumbered, and leave everything that she owned, and just set off somewhere unknown.
Kristen, what did you think?
Traveler. Oh, it's so beautiful. And it does harken back to the Coin in Your Soul song, which says we are travelers. So the chorus is just so extraordinary to speak about a person who's about to die as a traveler, and that they are able to leave the world so light, so unencumbered. What does it say? Yeah, to set off somewhere unknown and travel so light and unencumbered is just such an extraordinary description of dying. But that was another one of the moments that just made me tear up on this record. And to frame it, you know, as part of Maya's notes, you know, what I understand is that part of writing the song was a processing of maybe Maya in real life wishing that her grandmother's death had gone differently, that she had been able to be there. And somehow this chorus just feels like the release, not just of her grandmother's soul, but the release of that guilt also, because like her grandmother wasn't taking any resentment
with her. She was leaving, and Maya and her grandmother had so many moments to connect over the course of life. So this, and it feels in this song like those moments were fully taken advantage of. And, you know, and one of the lines that really struck me was, I once tried to kiss her head 3 times in a row. No, just one, she said, that's enough. And it feels like such a, again, just such a mature songwriter idea that when you've said something once, you know, why say it again, David Byrne? I don't know. Like, it's just like you to find the right amount of emphasis is such an art. And it feels so forgiving of, you know, the things that we maybe regretted to do in our relationships enough times. You know, if it was done well once, maybe that's enough. It's just a really beautiful song. But, and I also agree with you, Cindy, that I feel this vulnerability, especially in Maya's voice on this track, that it just really pulls me in. It, like, there's something from the beginning of the track that feels like I'm going to tell you a personal story and I'm ready to hear it. So I'm not sure how to put that into words, but there's an acceptance of the fragility of, you know, sharing a personal story. There's something in the actual quality of the singing here that just feels special. And I like where it sits in the sequence on the record. I love that this credit, or this album has a credit for the sequence by Ethan Yojevitz.
I like that too.
I love that this album has a credit for the person who cooked the food for the musicians. You know, I feel like this is so, it, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just really calling up the things that are important, and you sort of don't realize those things maybe until you have some perspective. So anyway, I just feel like this sits in a good place on the record, and it sits in a good place in life.
Best shout out on the album to Hershey Park.
Oh yeah. Hershey Park. Yeah, the story. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, do you girls want to ride up to Hershey Park? Like the story of her grandmother telling a story of how she met her grandfather, right? That's what that is. Yeah. The details. Mm. The details that actually matter, you know, like when we end our lives, there's like one or two stories that, you know, become the things we leave as memories, and we travel on.
We were actually at the last song on the album, No Time to Rush. Oliver Wood. Wood, would you take us home?
Yeah, well, John, while he was here, said that he said there's something cool about going in cold, and I made sure that I didn't look at any of the notes about this thing until I just listened to it. I didn't want to have any preconceived notions about what's this song about, or even which song did I get chosen for. So I'm really glad I did that, because that's how I like to approach. Like, if you go see a movie and you have no idea, you have no expectation, which is kind of rare these days, but to go see a movie, and if it's a good movie, it's just much different if you have nothing, don't know what to expect. So I was really excited to get to be on this song or be able to talk about this song, because this one was my favorite. And I think it's perfectly placed and has some of my favorite poetry. Just the first verse alone, I just love. There's no time to rush. It's all tangled and delicate. It's all honey and hairbrushes. Like honey and hairbrushes. Is that something that happened? Has that happened to you? Maybe? Whatever. That's a beautiful. I get that immediately somehow. I like the melody, especially the forever, which is 3 octaves above that, but I just absolutely love that pinnacle. And for that matter, I think a theme that was already mentioned was just time in general and how to make the most of it and how to interpret it. And I love the idea, like what was the first song says, you like how there's an hourglass inside of us. And I love that. That really stuck to me. And I think of that image throughout the album, like that keeps coming back to me. And it's cool that you put that image in the first song, but then you talk about how you change the way you think about forever. And I just love that. I love all things time related and making the most of time and how we change our interpretation of it, and how, cliche these days, but when we do slow down and stop time somehow, or at least be in what I've heard called vertical time, where time's not moving forward or backwards, it's just right here, and it just goes up to the sky and down here in the dirt, it's vertical time, like you're in that moment, and I think that's huge. And the perfection is a lie idea. I mean, I think as artists, we talk about that quite a bit, where, our favorite part of a record is when you hear somebody make a little mistake, or you hear a little pitchy moment or a little noise that probably was not intentional. So the things that we don't have control of are the best things, So I love that. That relinquishing control and trusting feeling that comes from, perfection is a lie, don't even try for it. And I love that you recorded the way you recorded it, and you recorded it with that in mind. You recorded this album with, we're not going for perfection, we're going for vertical time, we're going for whatever happens, we're going to capture it. And that's what it feels like you captured in all of these songs, but that one really stuck out to me. Really loved that song. So thanks for putting me on it.
Could I add one thing about, so agree with Oliver and everybody about how glad I am that Maya recorded this record this way. But I also listened to the record through with before reading the notes. And so it was a surprise to me to read that it was recorded live, because
yeah.
It doesn't sound...
With no edits.
Yeah, with no edits. Yeah, right. Live and just like complete takes. That wasn't how I absorbed the record. I felt like it didn't sound like a live record. It just sounded alive. It just really mm-hmm. sounded like it was a living creature. So that's yeah. just an incredible testament, not just to Maya, but to the whole band, to everybody who played on it. It just mm-hmm. really breathes.
Absolutely.
Well, we did it. That was awesome. Thank you to Anna Egge, Caitlin Canty, John Craigie, Kristen Andreasen, Oliver Wood, Maya, we didn't hear from you this whole time. What was that like?
Well, I just hope that everyone who is here understands just how much these songs would not exist without your direct influence in my life and your direct inspiration. Like, there's, whether it's like, I just think of like Anna Eggy with like these like kind of bold melodic leaps sometimes, and like Oliver Wood and John Craigie like showing me how to kind of incorporate like religious spiritual language like into songs in a way that feels like expansive. And like, I don't, there's just so like so many, I could like send you guys like the, when Cindy asked me to do this, and I was like, well, basically I'm going to give you like five songwriters who directly impacted these songs being written, and I had like my reasons, sort of like my connections to each of you to these songs. And for a lot of them, they were more than just the songs I assigned to you, but it's, I just like feel your like living presence in this record and in what I do, as, and also like as an artist and choosing to record this way, you know, knowing certain ways that some of you have recorded in the past and the risks you've taken in the studio, and like, you know, reading your liner notes or listening to interviews and just kind of trying to be part of that community of like inspiring each other. And so it's been really amazing to hear everything that you're taking from the songs. And but I just want you all to know like why I wanted you here and it's like honest. That it's so yeah, you were all my first calls and you all said yes.
So. Of course.
Thank you so much.
I'm so honored. And Maya, I also want to tell you, I've read the line about thanking your audiences, your live audiences, for listening and for conversations that inspired your songs. I just think you're such an incredible listener. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that really, so I'm honored to, you know, kind of receive the idea that you've listened to, you know, my music or something about my life. And I likewise would just try to be as good a listener as you are.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Good job, everybody. Man, I'm impressed with each and every one of you. Thank you so much for taking this so seriously. And I've learned a lot about, I mean, I'm excited to go listen to the album again and then listen back to this conversation again. This was so awesome. It was like, I was so nervous how this was going to turn out, but I think it was so great. Yeah. Thank great. You so much.
Yeah. Very inspiring. Thank you all. And congratulations, Maya.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Good job, Cindy, on your vision.
Good job, Cindy.
Yeah. Nice work, Cindy.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Dietrich Strauss composes our music. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. You can find us on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. You can go to BasicFolk.com, or you can find us wherever you listen to your shows. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. Maybe that friend that lives in Lancaster and goes to that Amish market all the time and is so proud of being from Lancaster and doesn't know Maya's music, but maybe should because she's from Lancaster. And so are they. All right, thanks for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.